Gets a touch, and he helped out.
That is a man's jam! DeMarcus Cousins nearly brought down the backboard and rim.
You're now listening to The King's Court, presented by SatKingsNation.com.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to The King's Court. I'm your host, Vince Miracle. Joining me, as always, is the great producer, Joe. What's going on, Joe?
Hey, what's happening, Vince? Another beautiful day. Just got done watching some basketball, so all is well in the world.
I know. Playoffs are always fun, especially when you get to see Isaiah Thomas and Al Horford beat the Chicago Bulls, because I have that series winning. Joining us today is very special guest. We're all about to go ham with this guy, James Hamm, the NBC Sports Kings insider. What's going on, James?
What's going on, guys?
It's been a little while. How you been?
Good. It's been an interesting, 2 weeks, just kind of taking it easy. What are we exactly, 2 weeks after the season ended? So the first couple of days, just a whirlwind with exit interviews with Vlade and Dave Yeager. But then after that, just taking a deep breath and saying, okay, I need a couple of days off. And then I can write some stuff. But then last week, it started the whole whirlwind again. And now we're right back into sort of prepping for the draft and prepping for free agency and watching a little bit of playoff hoop, which is nice. But, just kind of easy going right now. This is it's not coast season, but it's kind of like take a deep breath, get your feet back under you, and say hello to the wife and kids because you haven't seen them much for the last, 7 months. And then, sort of get back to real life.
You definitely seem to be doing a bit of traveling there, so I bet you're glad to just not be on a flight for a couple of days.
Well, I don't typically travel with the team, but what I do is I drive. I drive and drive and drive. I live way above Sacramento. I live an hour above Sacramento in a small community called Lake of the Pines between Auburn and Grass Valley. And so it's an hour to get to the arena. And then when I'm in studio, it's 2.5 hours each way to get to the studio. So I have a 2014 Toyota Corolla, and it has 95,000 miles on it. And it turned 3 years old this week.
For those of you guys who listen to his podcast, you know about his car because you hear it. The car podcast between you guys.
Yeah, the car cast with Doug or with Jerry. Yeah, it's good stuff. We do that on the way back just to give people a different approach, just to mix it up a little bit, and people seem to love it. We kind of narrate where we're at as we're driving home, and it's just a different feel. But during the dog days of the season, you try to fit things in wherever you can, and when you've got a 2.5 hour game plus pregame plus postgame, and you got to get there early because traffic in the Bay Area is a nightmare, and so it ends up being a 12-hour day at least. So those 2.5 hours on the way home, if you can steal an hour podcast or a 45-minute podcast, it actually makes a lot of sense to do.
Well, when are we going to get the carpool karaoke, though? I know you've been watching James Gore, and I know that's where you got the carpool podcast. We need some carpool karaoke from James Hamm. I know you like Maroon 5, too, so give us some Sunday morning.
I can sing. I actually was a choir guy in school years ago, and I've sang karaoke quite a few times. Whether I'll do that or not on the car cast is completely. I would have to get Doug to kick in. Me and Doug do sing a duet in the front seat.
That would be awesome.
Eventually,
that would be amazing.
This next season, the hope is, when we're doing road games, that we'll hook up the iPhone to the front window, and we'll actually be able to do a Facebook Live car cast where you can actually see us driving along, kind of cruising along. So I've got a I've got a lav mic I'll wear, and Doug will have his standard mic that he's sitting there holding and talking into. But that's kind of where we're going to go for next season, for at least a couple of games.
In your podcast, you were talking about, you know, Rudy Gay a little bit, and I know we're going to get into it a little bit later, but have you heard anything about Rudy Gay and what's happening with his contract? And because I know there's been like a lot of question marks. I've been getting it on my Twitter, and I don't actually have the for sure answer. But for those who haven't listened to your show yet, what's the details on Rudy Gay's contract?
He has a player option for 14. I think it's $14.2 million, and I think he has until it's June 6th, I think it is, to make a decision. I'd have to look at the exact dates. I don't have it off the top of my head. But there was some misinformation that went out that 5 days after the season ends, Rudy Gay would become an unrestricted free agent if he chose that. But it was actually 5 days after the season ends, if the Kings are in the playoffs and they're still going, or June, like I think it's June 6th. That's what sticks in my head, whichever came second. And so Rudy Gay will not be he has a player option, so he's got to make a huge decision. And it's not a decision that if I'm him, I'm real comfortable with, because, you know, he's almost 31 years old. He wants to go and play, you know, a handful of years on probably a playoff contender if he can get there. But realistically, he's concerned about this Achilles. And if he feels like he's ready to go, I believe he's going to opt out. And that's everything that I know of him, everything that happened in the preseason, everything overall. I think he opts out. If he thinks he can get maybe a 2-year, $20, $25, $30 million deal, maybe that second year is a team option just to make sure that his Achilles heals up. But I think he'll be a free agent here very soon. We just have to wait. He's going to wait all the way up until the last minute and make a decision, because, you know, you just don't know. This is one of those injuries. It's gruesome. And I felt really bad for him when it happened, being in the locker room right after it happened and seeing him with a hoodie over his face, knowing that he had been really emotional, knowing that his teammates were telling us, like, look, he's a train wreck and he's on crutches. It was just absolutely horrific. And Rudy's a great guy and he's a family guy. You know, we got to know his family here. He had his first child while he was in Sacramento, right after he got here. And then on top of that, he had a second child. So, you know, you get to know his wife, you get to know his kids. And to see something like this happen was absolutely horrific and such a bummer for him and his family.
There's a lot of stuff going on right now that's definitely a wait and see kind of, you know, nothing really happens for the Kings being out of the playoffs until, you know, at the minimum, the draft lottery balls, you know, and then finding out about Rudy. There's a handful of moves that are definitely going to happen, kind of up in the air. But things that did happen recently was Scottie Perry and Luke Bourne. So let's talk about that. What have you heard? What's going on with the Scottie Perry hire? I mean, has everybody already said their hellos to him? What's going on?
Yeah, he's been in and out of Sacramento, it sounds like. He's a guy with a mountain of knowledge and experience in the league. He's a really, really good hire. I know everyone was shocked when he was let go in Orlando. Most people thought he would be elevated to the general manager spot when Hennigan was let go. And this is just one of those guys that came open. And as soon as he did, I'm sure he had a lot of phone calls. But the Kings were aggressive, and they went out and they were able to land him. He will answer to Vlade Divac. That is something that we know for sure. He's not going to be above Vlade. But he has an executive vice president role, which is kind of strange. And I guess that's the same role he had under Rob Hennigan in Orlando. So he's a second in command. And so some guys get pushed back or pushed sideways or whatever. But, you know, everyone else is sticking around from what I know. So when you look at Peja or you look at Mike Bratz or Ken Catanella, they're all sticking around. This is trying to build something bigger and better than what they had before, get some more experience. And to be honest with you, I think Vlade's done a pretty decent job. You know, if you go back to his first summer, I think the Rondo hire, the Rondo signing is probably one that sticks out that didn't work out. But he played pretty well in his 1 year here. Kostya Kufis signing, Marco Bellinelli signing. Bellinelli certainly didn't look good in his 1 year, but he yielded you a first-round pick, so that's an asset that you were able to get. You're able to get Malachi Richardson out of that. And then last summer, you know, he spent some money with Aflalo, with Tolliver, with Temple, with Lawson, and I think he hit a couple of home runs, or at least a couple of really nice solid doubles with Tolliver and Temple. I think Ty Lawson played really well for what you, you know, for a minimum contract guy. I think Aflalo was, you know, a bit of a bad fit. But overall, I think Vlade, and he just needed more support, and that's what we're getting out of Scott Perry.
Minutes after the hire was announced, of course, Twitter went nuts, and everything on there was positive. And it was things like, you know, the Kings are finally, they finally have a solid front office and this and that. So it's great to see that people nationally are recognizing that the hire of Scott Perry is such a good thing. I'm really excited to see what he brings.
Yeah, I think this was a home run for this team, and I think it's something that had to happen. They had to add more depth to that front office. And so, again, I think it's a great hire. And then, again, you brought up Luke Bourne. I think Luke Bourne is a really, really crafty hire. They're going to give him a whole lot of support, too. I know he's going to be able to hire something like a handful of guys to work his analytics team. And this guy isn't just about numbers. He's about mapping trends, mapping, you know, player movement on the court, injury mapping, and all kinds of things. And I really think that he's going to be a nice addition. He's a Sloan analytics guy. He's a Harvard guy, you know, really, really smart guy who has been working with AS Roma in Europe over the last couple of years, soccer club. And on top of all of his other things that he does, you know, working again at at Harvard. And so I think he's a nice, nice piece. The thing that I like about him is he's a little different than most analytics guys in that he tries to feed the coaches things that they need, not things that that they want to force in. So, and that's not to say that Roland Beach was sitting here forcing numbers down people's throats. But at the end of the day, this guy, he has an idea to basically support this staff in a different way than they've been supported. And so they can go to him and say, look, we're having an issue with this. Can you help us figure out what the issue is? Can you figure why this combination of players aren't working together? And he'll be able to map those things out using advanced analytics and lots of game footage, the sport VU information, and then show them in a way that's really, really easy for them to figure out. And that's using video, it's using, you know, just really basic things that a coaching staff, a front office can use to better themselves. And that's what you're trying to do here. You're trying to build something bigger and better than what you had before. And the Kings have, you know, they've been light in the front office for a couple of years, and it's good to see them really spend some money here and try to bolster that front office.
Yeah, what, for me, it looks like, and you guys can weigh in on this as well if you guys feel to. But I mean, for me, James, it looks like that with the hire of Scott and Luke, that they're doing something that's kind of cool. Like when you have Vlade Divac and Scotty right there doing the, you know, the GM stuff, right? You have them with the old school mind, because Scott was there during the Seattle Supersonics days, the Detroit Pistons, where you're building a team with a bunch of different types of talents and making that through basically the process of growing players, right? Like that's their mindset. You grow players, you get the right pieces, you find the right mesh, you build great chemistry, and that's what can win you championships. But they're not also going away from the analytics, which is a new part of the game now. This is a new era of basketball where you have to have a new type of view on the game where numbers matter, how you you know, help your coach out with the assets that they have on their roster. So I really like these two signings and what they're trying to do with their front office, because I think, you know, the one problem that the Kings have had is starting from the top down. And I think everyone can agree with that from just watching this season since Vivek has taken over, is that there's been a little bit of a rift right there at the front office from the top down on this team. And it looks like they're finally starting to come together. But my question to you is this, James, is we haven't heard Vivek's name a lot in other than from the DeMarcus Cousins trade, and he was wavering between keeping DeMarcus and not keeping DeMarcus. But it looks like this has become Vladdy's team, but Vivek still has influence. And then you also saw that Adrian Wojnarowski, I think, reported that the Kings might be looking to replace him. But as you just said, you don't think that's happening. How much influence does Vivek actually have, and how secure is Vlade Divac now that Scott Perry's there?
I you know what? It's tough to judge, like, what means what with this franchise. I think Divac is going to be here long term, at least for the next year or two. They're going to certainly give him this draft, especially since he made the Cousins trade. You know, the next year they should have a high pick again, because this team is going to struggle in this first year with all these young players. And so you're looking at bringing over a lot of different guys. But I think if Vlade continues to show that he can mine for talent, then I think he's going to get opportunities. He's going to get an opportunity to see this thing through for at least a few years. And, you know, again, people were really harsh on him for Papi Giannis. But if you were to, if the Phoenix Suns were to come to you today and say, I'll give you Marquise Chris for Yorgos Papagiannis, Scal Labissiere, and Bogdan Bogdanovic, I think every team in the league would, like, say, hey, yeah, we're not giving up those three for Marquise Chris. And so I think you've got to look at it and give him a little bit of room for play here. And I don't think that the Perry addition means anything for Vlade, except for he now has a whole lot more support. He has a guy who's seasoned, who knows the ins and outs of the salary cap, and who's sat there and done a lot of scouting, who's a long-term NBA executive that can really just add some seasoning to the front office. And that's really what they need. They really struggled in year one. Year two, they added Ken Catinella, which I think was a great hire. He very highly regarded. And then year three, you add these other two guys, and I think it really does help. And what you're hoping is that Vivek pulls back and lets the basketball guys do the basketball stuff. I don't know if that's ever going to happen. And to be honest with you, I mean, if I owned an NBA team, if I won the lottery tomorrow and I was able to go jump in and be an owner on an NBA team, I would want say too, and that doesn't mean that what Vivek has done is 100% correct or 100% wrong. It just, you know, you have to understand that these guys, they have a major investment, and it's not just in the arena and making money. It's into putting a product on the floor, and sometimes your ideas are wrong. And I think, you know, he would have to admit that he's been wrong quite a few times here. And if he's not able to admit that, then, you know, he probably shouldn't be owning an NBA franchise. but in the end, again, I would want say in some of these things, if I were running a team, I would want to have basketball decisions. I would be bouncing ideas off of these guys. And so, I mean, it's more complex than people make it out to be. It's not like Mark Cuban just has no say in anything with the Dallas Mavericks except for paying the bills. I mean, he has a lot of say in what happens, and that goes for every owner in the league. Some guys are completely hands-off, but they still have to answer. You know, they still say, yes, you have this much money to spend this year. Go ahead and spend it. And you spend it wisely. Or, I like this guy, why don't you look into that guy? And they say, okay, well, he's not available. Or, hey, that's a great idea. Or, we were already looking at that guy, so good. But it's complex, you know, and I don't want to pile on Vivek. He gets piled on enough as it is. But I also will tell you that so many things that have gone out there in the media are like really basic conversations that people have. And it's almost like when you're having a conversation with a boss or with a friend or with a girlfriend, you say, hey, we should go do this. And then all of a sudden, the next thing you know, it's put out in the public as if you said that you're going to run 4-on-5 basketball and have a cherry picker the whole time. And that's it. You're doing it. And that's just not the case. So, you know, things get blown out of proportion quite often. And Vivek is an easy target because he's made himself an easy target, but also because it's the Sacramento Kings and they haven't been good for a long time. We're looking 11 years without playoffs. And so they are an easy target.
I want to move on to the future in a little bit, but I kind of want to move on to the season now. I want you to really start going ham now, James. Start going that last name, because I'm going to ask you your favorite question at the end of every year. We've been doing this for 4 years now. At the end of every season, I have you on. 4 years. Facebook told me.
they wrote it on the paper.
I have to ask you. Here it goes. What would you grade the season?
You know I don't grade seasons. Especially like this season. How do you even grade this season? I mean, I would love to tell you, Vince, that it's a full-on F that they, or a D-plus because they won one less game than they won the year before.
I'm going to tell you this right now, James. I'm going to start to interrupt you, but I told Joe this, and Joe can confirm this as well. Before we had you on, I told him I'm going to ask you this question because I've asked you this now for 4 years straight, and he's going to answer with either, one, it was an F, or two, it was an incomplete, because those are the two answers I've gotten for the last 4 years.
Yeah.
The season hasn't been good for the Kings.
You know what, though? I'm not gonna be that harsh, because, look, I think he bought in fully to the DeMarcus Cousins experiment for one more year. And you gave him a really, 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 really a seven-year-long leash, and he still figured out ways to defy logic. And so you had a choice at midseason. They should have done it a couple of years before, or they shouldn't have done it at all. But you had a choice at midseason to either trade him now or give him $219 million and never, ever, ever be able to trade him for the next 7 years. And it was 6 years, 7 years. That's what it came down to. And, I mean, there would be a point where DeMarcus Cousins is making $50 million a year. And no, I mean, that's two $20 million players plus something for someone to take them off your hands. There's just no one in the league that has that value to give you, that has that cap space. So, you know, after this first year and all this cap space is going to be eaten up, he would have been, he's a king forever, or he's not a king and you got to pull the plug. And so while I think that they would have somehow managed to be right there and fight for the eight spot. Maybe they miss it by a game. Maybe they make it by a game. I don't know. Either way, they get steamrolled by the Golden State Warriors. It doesn't matter. But I think the Kings had to make a decision. They chose their path. Whether that path is right or not, we won't know for like 3 or 4 years. You know, we're going to need to see what Buddy Hield is. We're going to see what they get out of the 10th pick from the Pelicans. And in all honesty, you're going to have to see what they get out of the number eight spot, because that pick was gone. The Kings were not going to get their pick this year. It was going to go to the Chicago Bulls, because if they didn't make the playoffs, it would have been the 13th or the 12th, and it would have gone. That pick would have gone away. And so I consider that part of the DeMarcus Cousins trade. I consider it Buddy Hield, two number one picks, and the second round pick that they have. And so, you know, they started a rebuild. If I were to judge the last 25 games of the season, I'd probably give them a B, because I really liked what I saw. I liked their intensity. I liked the growth of the young players. I thought that Yorgos Papayannis went from being a non-NBA player to a guy that you can squint and see that he might be something. Maybe not next year, but the year after that, you're going to see a player. I thought that Scalabiciere was absolutely spectacular. I thought that Buddy Hield came in and was the best shooting guard this team has had since Kevin Martin left in his 25-game audition. And so I was really happy to see sort of this transition. I loved what Willie Cauley-Stein brought. So I think I would give Dave Joerger a B. I think early in the season, if I were to go up to the DeMarcus Cousins trade, I would have given him like a C+. I thought his over-reliance on Matt Barnes was misguided. I thought that, you know, that not using Omri Caspi and letting him just like putting him in the doghouse and just kind of doing away with him when he's 28 years old and wanted to be here versus a 36 going on 37 Matt Barnes. Again, I thought that that was strange. I thought that the dual big man all the time was really strange and didn't work. And it was like beating a head against a concrete wall. But Joerger was learning his people and he was comfortable with Kufus. He's comfortable with Barnes. So can you like really hammer him for that? And so if I'm going to grade the first half of the season, I'll give them a C+. If I'm going to grade the second half, I'm going to give them a B. And I think that 25-game stretch really gave you a taste of what you might have. I think that the thin towers are really intriguing to me. I want to see Willie Cauley-Stein and Scott Labissiere play major minutes together for the next 2 years and see what happens. And I want to see Buddy Hield keep, you know, progressing as a player, taking better shots. I mean, I thought day one he walked in the door, and unfortunately he was better than Ben McLemore on day one. And McLemore's 4 years in. And, you know, you saw a guy who came in, averaged 15.1 points, shot 42% from three, shot 48% from the field. He rebounded 4.1 rebounds a game. I thought he just really did a nice job and showed that he's ready to be a starter next year.
So one of the things that Vince says a lot, and he hammers me because I'm an optimist, and I call him a pessimist.
You should never listen to Vince. Yeah,
He's such a pessimist, and he thinks I'm just too happy. But he always says, take everything with a grain of salt in the last 20 games that we just watched. How much of this are you seeing as potential, and how much of it is something we should take with a grain of salt? Because it is guys who are either tanking towards the end of the year or playoff teams who are resting guys. You know, so you're not playing against the number one talent. And, you know, we saw it a couple of years back with Ben McLemore. We've seen it with I could list players of the Kings that looked really good in the last 20 games and then didn't pan out. But
Ike Diagu effect. I get what you're asking. Yeah, mm-hmm. You're asking about are these guys just Ike Diagu, the guy who comes in and has three games?
Yes,
three games
exactly.
Every Kings fan wants him to sign for a 3 years, $21 million deal. And you're just like, wait a sec, he played three games. Come on, people. So, look, I get that question. I'll put it this way. Players are going to score on bad teams. Every team has somebody who scores. This year, the Lakers, they started the season 10-10, where they finished the season like, I think it was something like 14-45. It was something horrific. Their record after that 10-10 start was so bad. And Lou Williams averaged 18 points. Maybe.
That's what Laker fans are crossing their fingers for.
Yeah, but you know what? If they fall outside of the top three in the draft, then they don't get their pick. It goes to Philadelphia. So you ain't getting Paul George. You ain't getting nothing. And the problem that I have with them is, you know, once you took Lou Williams, who is a season scorer who scores 16 points a game every year, that, you know, or 14 points a game, whatever, he's a guy who you know what to count on. The rest of that team, I got to tell you, man, that team is not good. That talent is not good. Julius Randle is not good. Russell is not good. Brandon Ingram, he's a long ways away. And I would take, you know, even still, I would look at Buddy Hield and say, okay, really? Buddy Hield is going to be productive way, way quicker because he's a little bit older. But Brandon Ingram may never be as good as Buddy Hield was in the last 25 games of this season. And I don't know if that's going to be the case or not, but I'm just telling you, the rest of those guys on that team are they're players who put up numbers on a bad team. And, you know, Swaggy P comes in and gives you a bunch of points. But who cares? I mean, so I get that that people would be concerned. But what I saw out of the Kings was, number one, a fight. They fought all the way down the stretch. They played gritty basketball. But I also saw elite talent from Scott Labissiere. Like, when you ask a guy like Garrett Temple, you know, what do you think of Scal? He says, look, there's a game against San Antonio, and I hit him with a little pocket pass, and he's 8 feet away from the rim. And as opposed to exploding to the rim, he rises up, and he hits an 8-foot jumper. He goes, do you know how hard it is to hit an 8-foot jumper, like in the NBA? He's like, that's probably the toughest shot in the NBA. And he's just so smooth. He's like, he's so confident in what he can do, and he's only going to get better and stronger and bigger. And so when I look at him and I watch him do his baby jump hook, and I watch him do his spin move, and I see him rebound outside of his zone where he's just stretched out and grabbing everything. And then he starts showing you flashes of other things, you know, the 18 to 20 foot jumper. The follow-away jumper, the dream shake on the baseline. You're starting to see these things, and you're sitting there going, I cannot believe how good this kid is. And then you really look, he's played 1 year of college ball, and Calipari completely stuck him in the doghouse and just hung him out to dry. He came from Haiti at a very young age. He hadn't really played basketball at all as a kid. I read something today. They don't have one single hardwood court in all of Haiti. And so, I mean, he had never played on an indoor gym. And so when you look at these things and now you see where he's at, and we're talking 8 years from, you know, the time, well, the earthquake was in 2010, right? So 7 years, he's gone from like this little tiny stick figure kid to an NBA player. And he hasn't had any time to breathe or to think, you know, what's next. He didn't know English at all coming here. He spoke French and he spoke Haitian Creole. And so you look and you say, my goodness, if he can put it all together, he's got a $1 million smile. He's got a $1 million personality. He's got a $1 million jump shot. If he can put it all together, this guy could be an absolute star. And so I'm not going to throw away the last 25 games of the season and say, eh, whatever. You know, did the Kings try to win every game? No, they didn't. I mean, they sat Ty Lawson and Darren Collison like 5 games together, both of them. And like, you can't even bring the ball up the court. You got Langston Galloway, who had just got traded for, who's not even a natural point guard, you know, bringing the ball up. And they still competed every single game and fought. And so I'm going to say, look, you're building a personality, and that personality is Dave Yeager's grit and grind. But I see high-end potential right there. I see out of Labissiere. I see a really nice game, whether he's a starter long-term or he's a really nice sixth man. Buddy Hield is an NBA player. And then we got to see what Malachi is. We got to see what Yorgos is. You know, we got to kind of figure out who Willie Cauley-Stein is. I don't think we'll know what Willie Cauley-Stein is like for another 2 years. And you'll have to see how he morphs into different players all the time. But I think this team has talent, and I like the path that they're on. I like the veterans that they still have. And I'm kind of intrigued to see what they do with this, what, $60 million, potentially $60 million in cap space, 3 draft picks, and Bogdan Bogdanović this summer.
You know, you were talking about Scal, and preseason I got to interview him, and we talked to him. He was talking about how his first love was soccer, and he grew too tall for it, and that's when he picked up basketball. And what you were saying about how, you know, there's no hardwood there. He's not playing with the elite-level coaches that a lot of these high school kids get here. He's not getting, you know, to see what he's done in such a short amount of time, yeah, I'm excited. I'll admit it, my optimism is at a 10 for that kid, and he's the kind of guy that you want to root for. He has the, you know, the attitude. He's early in the gym. He's late. I mean, he's just all the things that you want to root for in a player. So I'm definitely excited about Scal.
Yeah, and his story is just so incredible. Like, there's nothing about this kid that doesn't say, man, he has to succeed. You want him to succeed. You know, I was reading again today. I was reading an article on him from when he was 19. He hadn't even gone to Kentucky yet. And it talked about, you know, him going through the earthquake. So his dad dropped him and his brother off after school at the house. His dad left. The earthquake hit. House fell on them. And it's just brutal. I mean, he was basically he was leaning up. Him and his mom and his brother were praying. And, you know, praying that they would survive and that everything would work out. And a wall fell, and he was in a crouch position. So his knees were up by his chest, and his butt was down by his heels. So he was in a crouch position, and the wall leaned over and fell on him. And he got stuck in that position for hours while his dad, in a panic state, and neighbors dug them out of a collapsed building. And all three of them survived, but then Scal couldn't even walk for a couple of months. I mean, he was stuck in this compressed position. And for him to, like, come full circle and to be in the NBA is a miracle. But then to see his talent and to see the joy that he lives with and just, I mean, to be around him, yeah, just being around him is just a breath of fresh air. He's very different than almost any player. And that smile, again, he beams, and he's such a good dude. I mean, I talk to him almost every pregame He's just good people, and you're pulling for him. You should be pulling for him if you're a Kings fan. But if you're a human being, you should be pulling for this guy, because really, he's been through a lot. And to see him succeed and have some success and know that there could be a whole lot more for him, it's really exciting.
All right, guys, I'm going to pause the show right here to give a shout-out to our sponsors. Everyone, go to check out BrickHouseIndustries.com. Check out all of their apparel from hats, shirts, and socks. And when checking out, be sure to use promo code KingsCourt, and you will get a 10% discount on any of your purchases. Also, to keep up with their latest apparel, be sure to follow them on Instagram and on Twitter at BrickHouse_IND. Now, James, let's go ahead and move on and start looking at the future of this team, because there are a lot of question marks. You have contracts that are expiring. You have team options on players. And then you have young rookies. And then you also have assets that you can trade away, guys like Kosta Koufos, for example, and even Ben McLemore being a restricted free agent. What are you expecting this offseason? Because, you know, for me personally, I don't think the team is bringing back Aaron Aflalo or Anthony Tolliver, although I know they're going to have cap space to use there, and I do like Anthony Tolliver on this team. I think this is a complete rebuild, and I think that's the right direction to go. So do you feel that same exact way? What do you think the Kings are going to be doing with this roster?
It's going to be really tough. What you're looking for is veterans like Anthony Tolliver, like Garrett Temple. You're going to look for more of those guys. But you're also looking for a young player who has a ton of upside, who can grow with this team. That's why I've brought up Otto Porter a bunch of times. And while I don't think Otto Porter is the bee's knees. He's not a future all-star, although he could be an all-star, a future, you know, fringe all-star player. I think he's a really, really good, solid NBA player. And the reason I bring him up all the time is because he's 23 years old. And he's a guy who fits this team long-term at a position of need. And you're going to have to overpay to get him here. But overpay, because you have so much money to spend. And that's the biggest thing I'll point out to Kings fans, and I keep saying this, and people, you know, if you look at Willie and the four rookies, that's five players. You add Garrett Temple, you add Kosta Koufos, you add Langston Galloway, you're already at eight players, and those guys are all guaranteed. Okay, then you've got two firsts and a second-round pick, so now I'm at 11 players. You add Bogdanovich, if you can get him over, now you're 12 players. Now, look, you still are going to have $50+ million, maybe even $60 million, to sign three players. And that's if you opt out of Tolliver, you opt out of Aflalo, you let Ben McLemore go, and Rudy Gay opts out of his contract. That is so much money to spend on three roster spots. And I don't even know how they do it. And even if you sign a two-way contract with that second round pick and you make him bounce back and forth between, you know, you eat up the new 16th and 17th roster spot, you're still looking at four roster spots with 60, 55, 60, whatever it is, whatever the number is. You can sign almost $3, $4, $15 million players. And that's a ton of cash. So I don't know where they go from here. I just know that they need to stay young. But they also need to bring in a couple of guys that are – I mean, again, I think Anthony Tolliver is a very good man who could really help bring this team along. And he's not going to ask a lot, and he's going to be a pro's pro, and he's going to do whatever it is that you ask of him. But you need two point guards. You need a couple of small forwards. I don't even know what you do here. You need depth at other positions. So it's going to be a really, really intriguing summer for this team, but it's a season of change where if you're aggressive and you can get the right guys, the right fits, they're not going to land a Jrue Holiday. They're not going to land, name that point guard, insert that free agent point guard that Jeff Teague or one of these guys. But they're going to have to be crafty with their money. And they're going to have to be aggressive, and they might be able to move up or down in the draft and take on some contracts, just eat up some of the space. But it should be a wild, crazy summer for these guys.
I have a couple scenarios for you. I'm going to lay them all out there because we're kind of running short on time, and this is just for you to kind of give your response to them, because I'm also going to have named some players for you, and then I think Joe has maybe a question or two left, and then we're going to just wrap up here. But let's go with my trade scenario first, because I think this one's going to make you laugh a little bit because of how you started this show about the Lakers, because this is a Lakers trade. I would trade for the LA Lakers, and if they can land that top three pick. Now, maybe the Lakers don't do it, or maybe the Kings will do this. I don't know. But this is just a potential trade in my mind that I think is potential. The Kings give up their, let's assume, 7 and 10 pick and also that early second round pick for D'Angelo Russell, the number 3 pick, and Luol Deng. They'll E up that Luol Deng contract. Do you think that's not necessarily a possibility, but you think that could be a conversation ad?
Maybe. I don't love it because I'm not a huge D'Angelo Russell fan. And I love
ice in my veins.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance that the Lakers are going to go after Lonzo Ball, and they want him, you know. So I mean, that's possible if they miss out on Lonzo Ball, if he goes number 2 and they're sitting there. But, you know, the Lakers are one team that really does need more picks. They need more help. But they're also a team that thinks that they can buy their way back into this thing. And they think that they can get Paul George, and they think that they can get Russell Westbrook the year after, and then they can build this thing, or maybe even Russell Westbrook and Boogie Cousins. And so that's a deal that does make a little bit of sense, because you're looking at taking on Luol Deng and the ridiculous money that they paid him. You're looking at moving into the top 3 where Josh Jackson would be there. And if you could have Josh Jackson with Luol Deng behind him at the small forward spot, I think you'd be really, really intriguing. D'Angelo Russell at the point, you know, sign some veteran point guard, let Ty Lawson or a Darren Collison back, or maybe someone else. And maybe you got some intriguing pieces here. But I mean, that would be a trade that I would at least look at. I personally, again, I don't love D'Angelo Russell, so I would just go, eh. Do I think the Lakers would do it? I don't know. That's a lot for them to give up as well, because Josh Jackson does look like a player, but getting out from underneath that Luol Deng contract might be something they're intrigued by. So I don't know. I'm going to give that one like a lukewarm.
At least it's not a no. So I came up with the thought that the Kings would have 4 roster spots they'd have to fill with their money. And I'm looking over, it's just right here in front of me, on the money that they would spend on. And I came up with a couple of names I'm going to throw at you. You can just say buy or sell with that reason. We're going to go down all 4. And then I think that'll kind of just wrap up the show from there. So we'll make this a little bit of a speed round, but not necessarily too fast. You ready?
Yep.
So first name, of course, is Otto Porter, and I think that's a huge buy for you, right?
Yeah, it's a huge buy.
So the next name for you, so we can move on quickly, is Taj Gibson. Yes, he's 31 years old. He's not the young guy, but I think he brings something that this Kings team needs, which is a veteran next to Willie Cauley-Stein that can play next to him because he can shoot the mid-range jumper. He can also get you the quick bucket down low, and he can also play defense with those fast feet. I think he's also a good mentor for Willie Cauley-Stein. So what are your thoughts on Taj Gibson?
I think a lot of those things are intriguing, but I also think that Taj Gibson is getting up there in age, and he's going to look to be on a winner. And money isn't going to be a huge thing. He's played a lot of playoff games, and meaningful games, and I think that the other thing I'll point out is if you're going to go for a positional player there, for me, he's not a stretch 4. He's more of a defensive minded low post 4. He can hit a jumper. But at the same time, I don't know that he fits. If you're going to go, you know, if you're going to go away from Anthony Tolliver there at that position, then I would prefer someone who's much younger, who can shoot the 3-ball. And, you know, that makes more sense to me.
Like maybe a Nikola Mirotic?
Yeah, like a Mirotic, like a, you know, the other Bogdanovic that can swing the 3 and the 4. I think there are a handful of guys that are intriguing that can play, you know, an Ilyasova that can play the 3 and the 4 and that can shoot the 3-ball and play defense. And they're younger than him, and they don't have the expectations of him because he's going to expect to play for a team that's really solid, you know, to finish up his career.
The third name I have here is Darren Collison. And I know he's kind of had like a pretty consistent year, but it's been a little bit up and down with the injuries, the thing that happened to start the season. But I think he's just been consummate professional. I think he wants to be a starter in this league. I think he is a starter in this league, even though he's had a bit of a down year. I think they should bring him back. And I want Darren Collison as the starting point guard unless there's another point guard in this draft. And I think he's a good veteran to teach that player until they're able to put him into the starting role. But I have Darren Collison above Ty Lawson, but I have Darren Collison as that next player.
Okay, I kind of have him as a toss-up because I really like what Ty brings. I just don't like the off-the-court stuff. And he's a good guy. The teammates like him a lot. He just, you know, the off-the-court stuff is going to be an issue. He's going to be way cheaper than Darren Collison as well. As far as Darren, I really like Darren. I've spent a lot of time with him. You know, I know him very, very well. We text, you know, I have conversations with him. And I would say that Darren coming back really depends on where the Kings land and what their philosophy is going forward. So he doesn't want to go through another final 25 games where he's being asked to sit the whole time. And neither does Kostya Kupis. These guys really wanted to play. And it's not that they, you know, they have to win. They want to win, but they understood and it didn't feel any better. So I like Darren a lot. I think he's going to get a pretty decent chunk of change, not as much as he would have at the beginning, you know, early at the end of last season. If I would have told you he was going into free agency, I thought he would get probably close to $12 million a year in this market. I don't think that's the case anymore. And that's for a myriad of issues. But I really do believe that if you land in the top three picks somehow in this draft, whether you take your two or three picks and you move up, or you just somehow luck out with the number eight pick and you move to number three and Philly moves to number one or two and you don't lose the pick, and you got a chance to take a De'Aaron Fox, or you got a chance to take Lonzo Ball, or I don't think Markel Fultz will fall out of the top one. But if you can get one of those other top tier point guards in this draft, then you have to think, will Darren Collison want to take a back seat in 6 months or in a year? And so that will dictate how many years you want to sign Darren Collison for, or if he wants to stay. He's going to want something like 3 years, and I don't blame him for wanting that. But if you draft De'Aaron Fox, De'Aaron Fox should be ready to start by midseason. And if not midseason, he's going to be ready to start the beginning of next season, most likely. And is Darren Collison willing to take a step back? And I don't think that the answer is yes to that. So I think you have a little bit of an issue there. But if you're back end of the draft, you're 8 and 10, and you're looking at Frank Ntilikina, or you're looking at Dennis Smith, those guys might not be as ready. Maybe Smith is. He's got incredible athleticism, and he's got, you know, star potential written all over him, but he's also got personality issues. So, again, I just think it really depends. Both Ty and Darren want to play, and they want to play 28 to 30 minutes a game next year, and they want to start or be in the mix big time. So if you're up high in the draft, then they're not going to want to come back. If you're down low in the draft at 8 to 10, then they'll think about it.
My backup to that is Shelvin Mack. I listened to your last podcast. I know you said I don't think you were a huge fan of Shelvin Mack. I am. I love Shelvin Mack. Love what he can do for the game. I love his defense. I don't think he's offensively there, but I think if you need a leader there off the bench, I think he'd be that other option if those two happen to find a different role where they can get that 28 minutes. But my fourth and final player for you was going to be Shabazz Muhammad. He's 24 years old, small forward. I don't think he gets too many minutes right now in Minnesota, but when he does, he's a bit of a spark plug. I'm worried that he can become a Tyreke Evans type of player where he holds the ball a little bit too much, and he's very, very predicated on driving to the basket, and he doesn't really look to pass that often like Tyreke was kind of early in his career. I don't think he was that great of a passer, although he did have that 25-5 season. What are your thoughts on Shabazz Muhammad?
I don't love him. I know personality issues have always been sort of there. I think that if you go back and you look at Minnesota this season and you look at the games that he was good in, they were good. And actually, they were better than good. And then the games that he wasn't good in, I think that you can kind of point to and say, huh, they didn't have that extra score. And I think that that's a big issue for me. It's that I not like Ben McLemore, but a little bit in that he's never shown a consistency to really earn his spot and to know that he's worthy. I mean, again, he played 19.4 minutes this last year. And I just, you know, again, I think he's okay, but he's going to cost you a lot of money. And so here's my point. In their wins this season, their 29 wins that he was part of, he ran a plus minus of plus 11.4. In their 49 losses that he was part of, he ran a negative 10. And so, you know, you look at his – in the wins, he shot 51.3% from the field, 39% from three. In their losses, he shot 5% less from the field at 46% and 9% less from three. He shot 29.9%. So my point is that when he wants to play, his offensive rating is a 118 versus a 109 defensive rating. When he doesn't want to play – the offensive rating is 109, 9 points per game less, versus a 123 defensive rating. And so that tells me that he can have a huge impact on your team. And that goes both ways, though. He can be a huge impact positively, and then negatively, he can sink you. And so I wish that he was better and he was more consistent. And I think he's probably going to get some decent money. But you got to have a really good veteran team around him to say, hey, look, man, you can't be that guy. You can't be this up and down and really, you know, mean this much to our win and loss column. And I think it's huge. I mean, again, those numbers tell me that, you know, you've got to really, really have a solid team around him.
That's why I'm so glad you brought that stuff up, because I mean, you look at a guy like Dave Yeager, his history is – it proves that he's good at developing players. Plus, I think on the wing you have a guy in Garrett Temple who I think proved to be a really good leader this year. I think he's going to win that Team of the Year award again, I think, or at least has a good chance to do it. I love what he brings to this team. And if they are capable of bringing back Anthony Tolliver, another wing player that can play both the three and the four, I think he's another guy that can get into Shabazz's head, because – like you just said, when he's in the wins, he's a very impactful player, and it goes both ways. And for me, I think he has the potential to turn into a Jeff Green, and that's not good. Jeff Green, I don't think, is a good basketball player. I think he's so much up and he's up and down. He's trick or treat, right? You never.
But
know
when you have
get.
The potential to become Jeff Green, and you're 4 years in, that's a little scary.
But he's only 24 years old. At the same time, like you can look at Otto Porter. He looks really good, but this could be his ceiling right now. Whereas Shabazz, I don't know if this is his ceiling, because he's only getting 19.4 minutes a game. And when he does play, there's some drives to the basket where he knows how to finish through contact. He loves driving to the basket. He's fearless when he gets there. He's a decent rebounder at his size. I don't think he's super strong, but I just think he's someone that can develop with already a group of young guys. And I think that if that's what you're building for, is to find young guys that you can build around, and he's an impactful player both for the good and the bad, just to see what you have and you need cap space to fill, I think he's a guy that should definitely be on the Kings' radar. And that's the reason why I brought him up.
I get it. And I'll also point out, in the month of April, he averaged 12.8 points per game, which is his highest mark on the season. He ran a negative 10.1 during that stretch. And his usage rate went from a normal of like 20, 19, 20, even, you know, 23 in February and March, to 28.7 down the stretch. And that tells me the last 8 games of the season, he tried to make an impact on people. So when he became a free agent, they might look at him. But if you look a little bit deeper than just the basics, I mean, a guy this strong, this athletic, this talented, he's got to average more than 2.8 rebounds per game. He's got to average, you know, he's got to do more. And again, he's one of the biggest players in the league that you look at, and when he's good, they win. And when he's bad, they have no chance. And it's an intriguing stat to really look at his plus minuses and his offensive defensive ratings and wins versus losses. But I mean, it's so obvious. You just look at it and go, oh, wow, that's brutal.
So I got one final question for you, James. Right now, you get to be the GM. The lottery balls land exactly where they're supposed to. We get the 8 and the 10 pick in Sacramento. Who do you hope falls to 8? Who's your number one pick at the 8 spot?
It's so tough. I really like Jonathan Isaac from Florida State. I really fell in love with Dennis Smith before having a lot of conversations. And if all things were considered, I mean, I would love if De'Aaron Fox fell. Yeah, I mean, De'Aaron Fox falls, and you do that in a heartbeat. I'm not a huge Lauri Markkanen fan. I just don't think the Kings need that. That's a luxury piece that's 3 years down the line. Maybe the Kings add Ryan Anderson at the end of his career, and you have the same player. But when I look at some of these guys that are going to be available, I think it's really going to come down to Frank Ntilikina. It's going to come down to Dennis Smith. It's going to come down to Jonathan Isaac. And you need two of those three. You're going to get two of those three. But I think Isaac can be a really nice addition to this team that can – it's going to take a while to get there, but he can play the three and the four. He's 6'11 with a massive, massive, like 7'3, 7'4 wingspan, who can pass, shoot, dribble. I like him. He needs to add a ton of weight. He's sort of Scalabiciere light, if that makes any sense, and that's kind of scary. Just because Scal is a stick figure and he needs to add more bulk, and he has added more bulk, but again, Isaac just needs more. And then Dennis Smith, you know, he has so much potential, but the red flags are there. And it's there for him to be a guy who gets numbers and that's it. And your team never wins just because he's getting numbers. It doesn't matter. Where Ntilikina is a guy who, again, is 6'5" point guard with a 7-foot-plus wingspan who will play defense on day one. So you're going to have to bring in a really good veteran point guard to play major minutes to bring Ntilikina along because he's 18, 19 years old and he's played in France. But he's a guy that's got a ton of potential. Whether he's got star potential like Dennis Smith does, probably not. But you gotta hit home runs here. I would take the 8 and the 10, or I would take the 8 and be willing to take back a massive contract if I could move up into the top three or the top 3, 4, 5. To get my hands on Josh Jackson or De'Aaron Fox or Jason Tatum, one of those three players, because you're not going to get into the top two, I don't think, and I think the top two are set with Ball and Fultz. So I don't know if that gave you the answer, but you know, again, like I've talked about this on the podcast, I would be offering up the 8 pick for the 4 pick to Phoenix. With Aaron Aflalo and taking back Brandon Knight's $45 million owed over the next 3 years. That's what I would do. I would try to get up into that range. So I take on Brandon Knight. He can be my starter while I develop a De'Aaron Fox, or he can be my de facto starter for right now. And at number 10, I draft Ntilikina, but either I get a point guard or a small forward at that first spot. And then I set myself up with a team that I think I can build with.
You definitely hit mine on the head. I think Jonathan Isaac is my pick of the draft right now. So unless my opinion has changed between now and draft day, that's the guy that I like to see. But
he's going to take a while. He's going to take a while. And see, that's the problem with moving from all the way down to 8. If you're number 6 with the potential to move up into the top 3 versus 8, where there's not a lot of chance of moving up, you had a much better shot at getting a player that can change the course of your franchise in the first 2 years. I think both Ntilikina and Jonathan Isaac, they're more like it's going to take 3 years to, you know, it's going to take an extra year with those guys. So if you can move up and get one of those big boys, that's a good way for me, you know, if I'm looking at this to improve quickly. If not, you know, it's going to take a little while here.
Yeah, my player's De'Aaron Fox. I've been on the De'Aaron Fox hype for a long time now. Joe can vouch for me on that one. And as for trade, James, you and I have spoken off the record right before we've done show and stuff. I'm not a big Brandon Knight fan. I don't think he's really that good.
You're not taking him because he's Brandon Knight. You're taking him because you get De'Aaron Fox. That's why you're taking Brandon Knight. Or Josh Jackson or Jason Tatum. You're doing that deal to move up to get a talent that is potentially an all-star talent. So, I mean, I always tell people, like, if DeMarcus Cousins was just an everyday average guy and as good as he is, you would have never traded him. The Kings would have never traded him, right? So if you're sitting at 6 and if you're sitting at 8 and 10, the chances of getting an all-star or star-level player at 8 and 10 is pretty slim. You might luck out and you might find, you know, a pot of gold. But you know this draft, the top 5 guys probably, maybe even 6, have potential to be all-stars. And I want an all-star. And if that takes move taking 8 and 10 to move up to number 3 or number 4, I do it every single step of the way, because I know that you can't get, I mean, you should have been able to get way more than 8 and 10 for DeMarcus Cousins. You should have been able to get, you know, number 2 and number 5 in this draft, and then number one next year. I mean, you should have been able to get a lot more, but because of who he is and his personality. So, I mean, it's complex, but I would be aggressive in this situation, and I would try to get up into that top 3, 4, 5 pick if you can, in any way, shape, or form, outside of moving from, you know, guys like Scal, Willie, and Buddy. Anything else, like, go ahead and make your move and try to get up into that spot, because I think getting a star is priority number one for this team. You hope you have one with Scal, but you're going to need another one in today's NBA. And you're still, I mean, even if you got 2 stars, you got 1 in this draft and Scal became a star. I mean, look at the Minnesota Timberwolves. They got 2 stars and they're still nowhere near. And so you need some help. You need some good luck. You need to spend wisely. But you also, you know, you have to be aggressive.
All right, guys, that is our show, our second episode down on Dash Radio. James, before we let you go, first off, thank you for coming back on the show. But secondly, let the fans and our new fans out here on Dash Radio know where they can find you online and what they can be expecting from you leading up to the draft and, of course, during Summer League.
Yeah, massive draft coverage. You can find me at what is my new Twitter handle? It's James Ham NBCS, right?
Yeah.
It's something like that. You can find me on Facebook, Facebook.com/ James_Ham, I think. Or James Ham Kings, I think. See, I'm not good at that. remember a few things. And then you can find me at CSNSportsBayArea.com, CSN California. You know, we're off for a little while with TV. But you'll find me there in pregame and postgame next year, along with my good friend Doug Christie and Jim Cosimore and Jerry Reynolds, Grant Napier. So, you can find me at all those places. I'll be writing nonstop from here on out, doing mock drafts, doing a lot of draft studying between here and there, having some really cool guests in, and maybe even some new front office guys. So, we'll see. But podcasting as well. I've had the NBC Sports Kings Insider podcast. Really, you know, between that and my time at Cowbell, I'm well over 300 episodes. So people know me from there as well. So, yeah, I'm everywhere. I'm in your dreams.
Just type in James Ham on Google and he's the number one guy that pops up. Just add that guy right there.
There I am. I'm the number one. I'm the number one James Ham on Google. That means you're winning, Vince Miracle.
Hey, if you type in my name, I'm the number one Vince Miracle on Google too. So, bam, winning
There's
together,
James. There's
only
one Vince Miracle ever. There's only one Vince Miracle.
All right, you guys can follow me on all social media platforms of at VM Center. Joe, I'm sorry. Where can the fans find you online?
At Sac Sports Morgan.
All right, guys, until next time, we are on every single Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. James, once again, thank you. And until next time, Sacramento Kings fans, bye-bye.